Okay, my name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. Just a few reminders before we get started today. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage, nysrti.org. We don't have anything currently scheduled, but if you check over the summer, I'm sure we'll have plenty of exciting things in the fall. A copy of today's PowerPoint and several handouts are available on the webpage under webinars and then today's webinar title. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. You'll also get that via email. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we do very much appreciate the feedback and look at that data every week. We're very pleased to have back with us Dr. Seth Aldridge to present our Strand 15 series, Integrating Tiered Database Decision-Making to Address Essential Questions in an RTI Process. Today's topic is district and school-level decision-making. This is the fifth webinar in a five-session strand. Dr. Aldridge is a certified bilingual school psychologist as well as a New York State licensed psychologist who earned his PhD in psychology at Syracuse University. He works as a school psychologist for the Homer Central School District and also consults with school districts across the U.S. concerning response to intervention for academic and behavioral difficulties. Seth consults with districts to utilize FastBridge Learning as well as AIMSWeb and other RTI assessments as part of a database decision-making within a tiered problem-solving process. He is a consortium member with the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center and works primarily with English as a new language learner, as well as family court-involved youth in his private practice. And at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Aldridge.
Hi, everybody. And thanks for those of you, I see some familiar names on the chat list. So those of you who kind of hung in there for the five sessions, I thank you. And for those of you who might be new to today's session, I want to thank you, too, for joining us. As Molly was saying, today's presentation really is sort of a tying together of a lot of the concepts that we've gone over on the past, the four previous webinars. This is on school and district level decision making. And our focus for today is really how each of the components that had been addressed in the four previous webinars can be tied together, how grade level teams refer to individual problem solving teams that might refer to multidisciplinary teams for special education decision making, and how our school RTI teams and district RTI teams kind of help and plan and support the infrastructure for those teams to operate very effectively and efficiently to benefit students and teachers. So it's really going to talk about how the school and RTI teams are informed by and inform grade level teams, how you take that information, and all this is part of a tiered problem solving process that those teams communicate with one another that help with important decisions that have to happen in schools. And we're using data to identify and prioritize acquisition and allocation of resources. That might be staff, materials, professional development, that's guided by data and sound information that we've all come to consensus on, you know, as well as putting our heads together and coming to consensus through looking at various pieces of data. And for that to happen, there has to be an infrastructure where we plan, communicate effectively, and that will help us to respond to the data. It's not like we have to recreate the wheel every time we have a meeting. Those meetings are integrated into sort of a fabric or an infrastructure that helps to support that decision making. We're going to spend some time today talking about how RTI information can be used for special education decision making. I think it's really important when we begin to look at all the pieces, how they can fit together and support one another, that that it's a synergetic process, that there's that each component is communicating with the other. So really that developing that infrastructure will help us to work much more effectively and efficiently. I've gone over this. This is the fifth time you've seen this in each of the webinars. Just kind of want to take a step back and get grounded. I'm not going to spend much time on this, of course. We've already gone over it, both behavioral, social-emotional behavioral, and academic needs. We will be a little bit literacy-centric here. I will try to incorporate both examples for literacy and math. And I think we always have to consider the social, emotional, and behavioral component as we problem solve and try to understand students and their needs and provide supports for them in school. And of course, we organize our approaches by tier to provide appropriate intensity to treatment. This is kind of, you know, maybe a little bit unique about this webinar series is I'm trying to kind of help districts to understand tiered problem solving, that not only are assessments and interventions kind of can they be addressed with different intensity, but the way we solve problems and try to identify problems with individual students or grade levels of students, that can also be approached with certain degrees of intensity. Where we look at all students at your post-benchmark data meetings. After those three benchmark periods, fall, winter, and spring, we look at that data for everybody. Everybody's on a level playing field, and who would we that triage for who we need to address immediately and intensively, and who might have less intensity. And we have progress monitor checkup meetings where we look at the progress monitoring data. Individual problem solving meetings. These are kind of, we're increasing in intensity here, where we're really looking at individual students for 30 or 40 minutes. We're going to reserve those times, the time that we spend for individual problem solving. And we're going to talk today about perhaps individual students where we have to make special education decisions for. And we're also going to really focus today on the district and school RTI teams. At a school level, representatives from the school that really plan the RTI infrastructure. And then at a district level, where we look at vertically your elementary school, middle school, perhaps high school, where to build in those supports. When we talked about how database decision making, any kind of time that we conduct an assessment or we're collecting data, we should be understanding the questions that we're trying to answer. And we've gone through these questions in the previous webinars. And so I just kind of want to really talk about what we're focusing on when we're approaching this kind of district or school level and multidisciplinary team level decision making. We still want to know, kind of maybe on a grander scale, what do our students know and what do we need to teach? Where are there gaps that we need to address at a building or a grade level where we have to provide additional support? There may be gaps in our instruction or interventions. But we have to know where those gaps are and how we can acquire and allocate instruction and interventions as well as professional development to fill those gaps. We're really looking a lot at program evaluation at this district and school RTI level. That we're using that data for program evaluation to see if we're reducing risk across the year and what we need to do to make sure that that happens. We're really going to look at who were some students that need additional support. That might be the multidisciplinary team meeting, or it might be subgroups of students. When we do program evaluation and we're seeing that, wow, there's a subgroup of students that really are not improving. You might consider ENLs or English as a new language learners, where if you disaggregate that and you're finding that, boy, those kids might be struggling a little bit more. Or conversely, we're really knocking it out of the park with those kids. Or other subgroups of students that you identify through your program evaluation where you might need some more to provide a little bit more assistance. Okay. we're really going to focus on again at those at the district and school level. What do we need in terms of material scheduling, professional development to address the needs of all students? In order to do program evaluation like this and really try to aggregate all that data and put it together, you've got to, the kind of data that you collect should be organized and communicated effectively with key audiences. As somebody who's had to have a table full of paper forms and trying to put data together that doesn't quite go together very well, I'm very appreciative of the kind of data management that some systems do. And I think a lot of the assessments that are used for RTI, whether it's STAR, AIMSWeb, FastBridge, iReady, all those data systems that we've talked about in some of the previous webinars can be extremely helpful because they manage that data and they put them into visual graphs so that you can analyze and communicate that information. That is essential if you're going to put data together and communicate it with key audiences. This is especially true once you get to that school level, district level meeting where we're trying to put everything together and have it have some kind of meaning so that we can take action on that data. I've got to do one of those full disclosures. I do work with FastBridge assessments. And I will show some examples of AIMSWeb, STAR, and FastBridge today in this report. This isn't an endorsement for any one of those assessments. I do really want to kind of, make it real and provide some examples of real data management systems when we're making some of these kinds of decisions. So we'll take a look at some of those assessments. And again, you know, I really think that I think this slide is really important when we're looking at how we don't want to be having one committee that works on Common Core that isn't really aware of your RTI, an MTA, multi-tiered system of supports. That APPR, when we're planning APPR assessments, you might want to consider those assessments that you're already doing for RTI. All of these approaches can really be interconnected. If you're on a local assistance plan, for those of you who know what it is, you have to collect data on your student improvement. Well, your RTI data can be very helpful for that. Special education, we'll talk about how the data that is used as part of a comprehensive evaluation for learning disabilities, RTI assessments are now recommended as a key feature of those evaluations, and we're going to talk about it during this webinar. Obviously, when we're looking at program evaluation, we're looking at improving school improvement. So all of this is about effective instruction, effective interventions, database decision-making, smart use of resources, and coordinated efforts. So we really want to try and kind of tie all of this together today in this webinar, and that's my goal. So the idea is we don't want to work in silos. That is not an efficient way of working, and we're going to really try to work on that coordinated infrastructure today. So in terms of the school and district level meetings, as well as your multidisciplinary team meetings, when we looked at that tiered problem solving, we talked about posting. Of course, there's informal consultation with colleagues where you're just chatting with folks in the hallway. And those conversations can be productive and insightful, but we're often not collecting information in a way that really can hold a lot of weight in terms of taking things forward. A lot of times when we have these post-benchmark data meetings where we put all the students in a grade level together and look at needs across the grade level and prioritize needs, and obviously we've gone through that in a previous webinar. But these meetings should be informed by and inform the school and district level team. So we're going to talk about that, how the school or district team would give advice on, okay, who is going to get Tier 3 supports? What are some of the guidelines that our data meetings at the grade level are going to use to prioritize students for Tier 3 supports or Tier 2? We obviously have limited resources at each grade level, and so the district or school team can help with those guidelines. We'll talk about that. our checkup meetings, where we're, again, looking at, okay, these students aren't making progress. What are we going to do to provide further assistance for those students? Sometimes we'll find gaps in instruction or intervention at those meetings that we then can inform the school or district team. You know, we're finding that we're struggling to provide this kind of intervention for this kind of need. We need this professional development, or we need this resource, or we're finding that we have to kind of rework some of the scheduling. And sometimes that vertical team can assist with promoting some of that those decisions. Multidisciplinary teams, it is important at a district level to have a policy, and if you look at, we'll go through some of the regulations on special education eligibility using RTI data from New York State, as well as the RTI guidance document that talks about how you have to establish certain criteria for what is deemed as weak compared to peers, and what would be considered inadequate progress. We're going to talk about that today. But the district, it's up to the local education agency, or the LEA, to provide those guidelines to schools of what it is in this district that would be criteria for a disability. And obviously, we're going to focus on the district and school RTI teams because they're really kind of making decisions about acquiring resources, decision-making, and infrastructure, including the assessment toolkit that we talked about, I believe, during the first webinar. So all these decision makers, problem solvers, these groups that make solve problems, have to be coordinated. That's what we're going to talk about. The tiered problem solving within an RTI process provides an infrastructure and a systems level opportunities to identify, understand, and address problems and needs. So we're back to that problem-solving model of identifying a problem, trying to understand it, creating a plan to address that problem, setting a goal, and evaluating whether we were successful in meeting that goal. And the tiered problem-solving really helps us to do that at a school level or a district level. So again, steps to problem-solving, and this is part of the May 24th webinar. We identify the problem, analyze the problem, and remember, when we're doing this, whether it's at an individual problem-solving team meeting or a district-level meeting or school meeting, we don't really want to get bogged down in conversations about things that we have no control over or kind of griping sessions. We got everybody, all these rocket scientists in the room. We want to put that brain power to work in a productive manner moving forward, not kind of wallowing in some of the things that we don't have any control over. You really have to kind of know what you have control over and what you really have to know the Serenity Prayer pretty well. We then would plan interventions. And again, now we're talking about planning interventions maybe at a district or a school level about, we're noticing that at second grade, we're having students, they're doing pretty well on the phonics and phonemic awareness measures. I'm just making an example here. But we're noticing that their oral reading fluency just is not progressing like it should, even though those other skills seem to be addressed. Or we're finding that our kids in third grade have excellent calculation skills. Based on the data, we're finding that those assessments are doing pretty well. But as a grade level, when we give them math applications problems or applied math problems, they're really struggling. What kind of resources do we need to identify in order to address the more applied problems that correspond with core curriculum or common core curriculum? So it might be resource acquisition, or it may be that we're finding that our second graders really have very low risk. There are very few students at second grade that we find at risk. We're able to move a literacy or an interventionist for a couple of periods from second grade to third grade, where there's significant risk that we have to address just by the nature of that particular year in third grade. So we're looking at allocating resources as well. Identifying professional development. I think when a grade level team, we talked about at a grade level team meeting, where the first thing we look at is core instruction and where are some gaps and problems that we're having in core instruction. Well, many times you're not going to solve problems right at that grade level meeting. It's just really not enough time. What the grade level might do, and there's a resource that I posted, an accompanying resource that can kind of help the grade level meeting to identify some of the issues that need to be taken to the school RTI team or the district RTI team. What are some professional development opportunities that need to be addressed so that we can move forward with the problem? Scheduling might be an issue, too, that needs to come to another team to kind of work out. We want to set realistic but ambitious goals. We want to know how to evaluate outcomes. And if you have a well-functioning RTI model, you know that those assessments are already built in. You've got great universal screening measures that should be addressing the appropriate components of instruction that are for that grade level. And the data management ties it together so that you can work with and communicate the data. And then we want to know, we really want to kind of follow up when we've, say, a grade level, a school level RTI team talks about, okay, we're going to put this into place, kind of following up and seeing how it was put into place, supporting intervention follow through and following up on how those changes were taking place. And then communicating with relevant audiences. That might be back to the administrative team. It might be parents. There are various audiences that we need to communicate our data with who are audiences for that data. So there are accompanying resources with this webinar. There's an RTI action plan. And this action plan goes through the core components of RTI. This was adapted from a tool that we use. As you know, I'm a member of the New York State RTI Consortium, and we have an action plan that we use to work with schools. And I adapted that a little bit, and that's on the site. I think it's a great measure for looking at doing an action plan for RTI, identifying needs, who's going to be responsible, how will you know that it has worked out or that it's been successful. So that RTI action plan can really help you develop a course, short-term goals and long-term goals for improving instruction and assessment associated with RTI in your school. And then there's a little resource that I came up with that from the grade level data meeting, kind of like sometimes when we're at a grade level data meeting and we're prioritizing students for intervention and you begin talking about that one student for more than 2 minutes and you begin to think, you know, this is going to take, this student needs more than a grade level data meeting. We want to refer the student to the individual problem solving team meeting. This the needs of the student are too complex. The same might be said for a core instruction issue or an intervention issue that the grade level is grappling with, where you're at the meeting, you're talking about core instruction, where you're seeing that there's some problems that exist that you're trying to identify and people have some different ideas about that. You may not solve that day at the grade level data meeting. You might want to write it down and meet with it at a later point. At a grade or a team meeting or a collegial circle, and you may want to take it to the school RTI team meeting or the district team if you're looking at, wow, we have this idea about this resource that we need or this professional development that we need that arises from the data meeting. Take that to the district team because they're the one, those are the ones with the money, and those are the folks that allocate the resources. So when you have a team of teachers coming together and planning that need for professional development or that need for an intervention that addresses something, that's where you want the grade level meeting to communicate and advocate for themselves at a school or district level. So the school level team, I would recommend that they would meet 4 to 6 times a year or request it as needed. members of the school level RTI team. I didn't be the principal. You really want to have teacher reps. You want to have grade level folks, general ed teachers, as well as perhaps special ed folks involved on that team. They're definitely a huge part of what happens at the grade level. Interventionists, that might be a reading specialist or math specialist or an RTI interventionist. I like school psychologists. I think we kind of have some knowledge about it. We have a perspective on assessment and data that can come in handy. And then we've got literacy coordinators, folks, ESL teachers, folks like that that can be really helpful. You might want to consider other kinds of faculty members. Certainly at a middle school level, having content area teachers would be really important. At the middle school level, we know that many students come to a content area class, social studies, science, math, and they can't access the curriculum because of some foundation skills. And so having them at the school level team really helps for planning. Parents, in some communities, parents might be a good idea, community members. You might just want to consider these people. The idea is that you're coordinating the RTI for the building, really working on infrastructure. You're coordinating assessment and problem-solving schedules and support for teachers. So we talked about the assessment toolkit, for example. The district team and the school team, they know the assessments across the grade levels and what kind of assessments are necessary. So by having that vertical structure at the school level, whatever grades are there at the school, not just at a grade level team, but vertically, can really help to coordinate assessments, interventions, the ways we problem solve, and scheduling for things like universal screening, data meetings, all those things can be scheduled through the school level team. So they're doing a lot of that coordination. And, as having everybody there can really help with some of that scheduling because they know when the trip to the farm is in the spring, and so you can't have the data meeting that day. They also can plan professional development. Again, having, instead of just at a grade level, really having representatives across the grade levels can really help strengthen core instruction as well as plan professional development. And they would then report back to the grade level teams as well as the district team. So again, there's a lot of communication involved. And having certain documents like your RTI action plan or your the grade level data team form that I was just talking about on the previous slide can really help. As I age, I know that I think I'm going to remember something, but if I don't write it down, sometimes it's history and I can't get back to it. So having documentation of all these decisions is huge. So the school team can analyze screening and progress monitoring data across the grade levels and look at where you might need to reallocate some resources because certain grade levels are really hurting or certain classrooms are really hurting. So really looking at needs across the grade level and looking at staffing, materials, schedules that need to be done. Again, it's great to be able to coordinate these things at a grade level, but sometimes you have to look at things vertically as well. The second grade team might think that they've got it real bad until those representatives see what the third grade team are dealing with, or vice versa. Really coming up with a school-wide action plan and goals to address the need, looking at the effectiveness of the school-wide plan, evaluating progress toward the school-level goals, planning and scheduling benchmark and data meetings, and just working to improve the decision-making process. And to spend a little time on this, we really want decision-making processes, for example, how the process or how comfortable people feel at a data meeting. We want people to feel supported at those meetings so that this shouldn't be where we're putting people in the hot seat. But these meetings should be very collegial, very professional, and very productive. And we need people to feel that they're not being put in the hot seat or really challenged, that they're there to support folks. By the way, I just want to note there is a chat. So if you do have questions or comments, please feel free to put them into the chat. It's really nice to have those questions. I probably will not, I'll probably answer them at the end of webinar because chances are we'll be kind of addressing some of the questions that might be posed during the webinar. Okay, so so some of the things that a school database decision, you know, some of the database decision-making questions that might be addressed at the school team level is we would look at what percent of the students at each grade are at risk. And I'm going to show you some visuals in a second, some graphs where we might be able to kind of visually look at that across the grade level. That makes that kind of decision-making very much easier because there's a visual graph that shows that. Is risk diminishing over time? So is the grade level being effective at diminishing or reducing risk this year and then perhaps over multiple years? We have data across data systems that we use for RTI to address those questions. Are there specific areas of need? So really trying to understand where the process is breaking down in terms of instruction or intervention that we need to really improve, that there's a gap somewhere there at that grade level or with these students that need to be addressed. Again, and are there subgroups? Maybe students with disabilities are really not making the kind of progress we'd like to see, or English language learners might be struggling, especially because we need to find some supports for them. There might be subgroups. Again, if districts are familiar with LAP plans, the local assistance plan, sometimes they'll identify, based on your state testing, that there are subgroups of students who aren't being successful, and you have to put a plan in place to address that. That's kind of where that RTI can support those kinds of things that are coming at a school or a district and support school improvement with some data that's coming from your RTI data. And where are instructional or intervention gaps? So the school team is charged with answering these kinds of questions. So this is, and actually the resource, the data meeting input from the school or district team or for the school and district team. So if you're, and actually the form that is available for download is actually a little bit, I just want to put some of the things on this slide. The form that you would download is actually quite a bit more thorough, but looks pretty similar. So when you're at your grade level team meeting and you're not able to solve a problem within a couple of minutes, say you've identified a core issue, a core instructional problem that you really have identified as you know, if we could fix this, this is going to help a lot of our students. We can't fix this one student at a time. This is a core issue. So you might identify some concerns. What contributes to that grade level concern? What are some possible ideas to address the concern? What are some barriers? Maybe some we need to change some strategies. Maybe it's a scheduling barrier. Maybe we need some resources. We have to reallocate some resources. Maybe there's some professional development needs that need to be undertaken, and additional supports for because we've got the interventions, we just don't have anybody to administer them or other. And then opportunities, kind of the same things. What are opportunities or strengths that we have that we could capitalize upon to make some of those improvements? And what would the grade level like to see happen? What's our goal? And then taking this information and going to the school or district RTI team with some concrete information about what's a need at the core or at the grade level. So again, a form like this, a little bit more. In fact, the form that is available for download is in table form. I like forms to be done electronically so that they can be saved and emailed, and then you can continue to work on them, that they're live documents and that they can be communicated effectively. So the resource that's online is in table form so that you can just type that information in, change it, improve it, update it, and then communicate it very easily with important audiences. So now we're going to look at, well, okay, who is the district RTI team? And what kind of purposes would they serve? They've, as you can see, they've got a lot of things to do here. We see in terms of, I got to get my pointer here. Oh, my pointer's stuck. Well, as you can see, I had a little trouble with my pointer here. I'll try to draw it. Oh, there we go. Now it's working. So when would they meet? Because of the members, let's start with the members first, I suppose. You really want to have the leadership, the superintendent and or assistant superintendent, some people that are really kind of in charge of purse strings and really need to be aware of where some core instructional issues are, that these are really important audiences for the information. And they can be very effective in helping with identifying and supporting progress in the district. Director of Curriculum and Instruction would be an important person because they're often in charge of the program evaluation, professional development, material acquisition, et cetera, et cetera. Director of Pupil Services, or they go by different names. I know different districts have different folks like this who are in charge of school psychologists or social workers or different support staff. A special education director, and I think this person is very important. Even though RTI is a general education initiative, the decision-making, some decisions that the district has to make concerning disability identification that you'll see in this presentation, the special education director is a very important audience and really needs to have input into that. So having that person is really important. Principals, teacher reps, interventionists, or representatives of that, and some support staff representatives. So really getting a cross-section of folks from the schools on the district team membership that can report back to their schools. When would they meet? Well, it's really going to depend on where you are with your RTI process, but certainly as needed as things arise. But I would say at least twice a year as you're kind of updating decisions about material acquisition and allocation, resources, professional development, really looking at the data across the district and seeing where needs exist. And there might be other situations that arise that require coordinated decisions where the district RTI team might be really helpful to do that. So they really need to examine the grade, school, and district level needs, including core instruction. You want to look at, we talked about the first webinar, the assessment toolkit and being able to do an assessment audit. Kay Stahl did a good webinar on that that is available on the TAC site that would be really good for you to take a look at. So you want to make sure, and why it's important for the district team to be looking at that is that your assessments are coordinated. For example, a lot of folks right now are looking at APPR assessments. We need assessments that are used for special ed decision-making, program evaluation in the district, RTI. All these are kind of district-level decisions that you need to make. And you want to identify needs, gaps, and redundancies in your assessment toolkit. The district team can be very, very important to making those decisions. Also, the same thing with needs, gaps, and redundancies in interventions. Many interventions are very costly. You don't want redundancies, interventions that do the same thing. And you want to identify where there might be some gaps in those interventions district-wide and really prioritize what you're going to use your money to purchase. There are finite resources. They might help to schedule and coordinate certain meetings. This is one thing that we'll talk about during today's webinars, developing decision rules for perhaps for what would be criteria for a tier 3 intervention or a tier 2, as well as criteria for LD determination. As you know, RTI, part of the, our regulation or for RTI is that information on students receiving tier 2 and tier 3 interventions, that has to be shared with parents. Benchmark information has to be shared with parents. And progress monitoring data for those students receiving tier 2 and tier 3, that information has to be shared with parents. The district needs to send a letter, and how that information is shared with parents might be a good idea for that to be done at a district level. And again, the district team kind of helps to support that and develop an infrastructure that coordinates all the different initiatives that I showed you on that other side, was PBIS, your local assistance plan, school improvement, et cetera, et cetera. So your grade level team, you know, you're looking at what are the gaps that we're finding with our core instruction and intervention. And what gaps are you finding? You might find that, you know, your assessments, your process, your scheduling, that you're really struggling with that. What materials are lacking? What professional development do you need? Are there obstacles to full implementation of your RTI? The grade level team at the post-benchmark meeting might come up with some ideas for how they can improve things at the grade level, kind of at that larger level. That can then be communicated with the school and district team. For example, these folks need to help with those decision rules about placement into Tier 2 or Tier 3. And you'll see a little kind of decision-making tree in just a second that might come down from a district or school team. And I'll talk about that a little bit. What have we looked at? The school team can kind of see, you know, when we look at everything over the years and across the grade levels, what's working and what's not working through our program evaluation, answering some questions like that. Really vetting materials. This is huge. There are so many materials out there that are purported to be evidence-based and that are going to benefit students. You really want a district and school team to be really spending some time vetting materials that really truly address the gaps that are identified through the teachers at each grade level, as well as folks that are looking at the district as a whole of, wow, these are some gaps that we have. Here are some supports that we need to prioritize for expenditure and for professional development. So the district and school teams are hugely important in spending some time to really vet the different instructional approaches as well as interventions. Assessments that are used district-wide. Again, making sure that your RTI assessments align with your APPR assessments, that align with your special ed decision-making, that align with other decisions that the district might be involved in, such as local assistance plan or other initiatives that you're asked to do. And what's your process for professional development? We've already talked about this, having an inventory, and I've talked about this at each of the webinars, having a list of interventions and approaches that are effective at each grade level and for Tier 3, Tier 2, and core instruction. We want to look at what is available at each grade level, what it addresses, what's the source of evidence, who can pull it off, what are the supports needed to pull it off, how much time is needed, how many days a week, what the group size would be, and how we can support that intervention. Knowing what's available and what's already available so that we're not purchasing something or planning for something that doesn't exist is hugely important. So having a menu like this is important. I've already talked about this previously, though. So at the grade level data meeting, we've already talked about, you know, looking at the big picture, what percent of students are at risk, is risk reducing over time, whose risk is reducing or increasing, how does your school compare, and possible areas of weakness in core. So we're going to look at some charts that look at that. This happens to be, so at a school level team or a district level team, if you're using AIMSWeb, and not to do a big training on box and whisker charts, but I just want you to look at grade three here. And you can see, and the idea of a box and whisker chart is this would be the score that the average student in this little thin line here, the average student got this score over here. But proficiency is actually way up here, that a lot of kids are really below proficiency. They're really struggling. While up here at fifth grade, these kids are doing extremely well. The average student is above proficiency. So where we're seeing that at this grade level, we're seeing some real problems. This grade level, we seem to be seeing some real strengths. We can kind of look at vertically. This might be something that we might look at for resource allocation. And professional developments for a particular grade level. Lots of students at this level are above target. Lots of students at this level are below target. And this is how we can use data for that resource allocation or professional development. One note is, honestly, if this were a fall benchmark, it is really second grade that may have produced that may have produced this problem, where there are a lot of students at risk in the fall of third grade. That's not on third grade. If this were spring of third grade, perhaps. So you kind of have to look at, well, how is the grade level reducing risk over benchmarks? And this happens to be a FastBridge report. Might be a little bit difficult to see. But here you've got the idea here is, so we're Swift Elementary here, Swift Elementary, and then down here, Swift Elementary. This tells kind of a sad story. This is in the fall, this is in the winter, and this is in the spring. The idea behind these kind of tier transition reports is you've got a number of kids here below the 15th percentile. That proportion is, of red is here. Some students here between the 20th and 30th percentile, these students are above the 30th percentile. I'm sorry, are low risk, actually. This would be below 15th percentile. These would be about between 15th and 45th, and this would be above 45th percentile or proficient. And what we see is in Swift Elementary, from fall to winter, we're seeing more and more students gaining risk. So this is increasing risk across time at this grade level, or in this school, rather. So this is just looking at the school in general. Students across the school are increasing risk. And by spring, we see that, again, pretty sad story here, that now we went from, you know, most kids being low risk to the great majority of students at Swift Elementary being high risk. This is exactly what you don't want to see. And you can kind of look at this, again, for a school level, or if you were to look at a grade level, say this is Swift Elementary, and we see that this teacher here went from mostly proficient to increasing risk to all risk. So again, using data to look at increasing or decreasing risk across the school year and finding pockets of strength and weakness and what we can do to address those strengths and weaknesses. So we really have to reflect in, you know, so part of the problem-solving process is to try and understand the problem. So we really have to analyze to understand the problem. What are specific areas, using diagnostic data to find out what are some things in core that we need to work on through some diagnostic data. What data, you know, what aspects of core instruction need to be addressed. We really have to kind of figure out what where it's breaking down, and are there reasons why certain groups of students aren't making gains, and bring this back to the school or district team. This is that decision tree that I was talking about, and we had gone over this at one of the previous webinars, but you might have criteria for what is considered low risk in your district. I think this is good for the school or district team to come up with these kind of decision trees because it's about allocating resources. Having said that, I think also we want to be guided by these types of criteria, not handcuffed to them. For example, we might say high risk would be students who are below the 20th percentile locally and high risk based on criterion cut scores. So they might be considered high risk. Your district might say, you know, we can't fit that many students in. We can only do tier three for students below the 10th percentile locally based on the available resources in our building. So it really depends on available resources that you have that would help to determine these cut scores. What you don't want to do is set cut scores in such a way that too many students are put into the pool of tier two and tier three, and your group sizes are too large, and then very few students get benefit. So you want to structure these decision rules such that you can still maintain a very high intensive intervention for certain students at tier three, some intensity at tier two, but don't overload those groups. Again, you know, tier two interventions are generally seen as no larger than groups of five. So don't overload those groups. So your district has to kind of come up with what some of these risk categories are based on existing resources. And so you might use these kinds of reports, rainbow charts with AIMS Web. STAR has these kind of reports where students with certain cut scores in percentile bands, like down here, might be considered for tier two or for tier three supports. Students in these color bands might be considered for tier two. These students here who are still at risk, but generally average and don't fit into tier two and tier three, would get tier one supports or additional intervention in tier one. But these, again, the reason that fits into this presentation is these decisions would come down typically from the school RTI team, and the school team might be informed by the district team. I'm going to go over this slide for the sake of time. I do want to spend some time on multidisciplinary team meetings in our last 8 minutes or so. These I call multidisciplinary team meetings. Those folks that make special education decisions for students. So these meetings are as needed when parents request a CSE evaluation. So we're frequently meeting for those CSE kinds of decisions. Members are principal, special ed director, special ed staff, reading staff, perhaps the nurse, school psychologist, literacy coordinator, social worker, anybody that really has to do with the student being referred for that special education decision that has to be made. And it's about managing formal services provided to students through special ed. Oftentimes, they're referred to the multidisciplinary team from an RTI process when they have not responded to multiple attempts at intervention. And there's there's a track record of due diligence that we've tried this, we've tried that, we've collected data, we've progress monitored, we've responded to the data. There's been an ongoing process, and now we're really feeling that this student is an atypical learner. And we'll talk about what some of those characteristics look like under RTI. That's what we're going to do now. So the multidisciplinary team really has to kind of be communicating with the school and district team. The multidisciplinary team is in charge of initial referrals and reviews, IEP goal setting, reevaluation reviews. So those are the key decisions and data. They have to use data to make those decisions at a multidisciplinary team level for special ed decision making. One of the things that we look at when we're using RTI criteria to determine special education eligibility, and this is not new with RTI, this has been in existence for many, many years, is you have to prove that adequate instruction was provided. That's a rule out. You can't label a student as having a learning disability if there's evidence that adequate instruction was not provided. And this is what your RTI process does. It's really about providing scientifically based core instruction that's differentiated for all students, including those students who are at high risk, as well as some real interventions that address individual student needs. And so you're really, really addressing that adequate instruction part of it through your RTI. At your multidisciplinary team level, you might find that, you know, there's some things that folks really need to support students who are at risk. So again, allocation of materials and resources. We need to make sure that the RTI process was fully implemented. You can't refer a student for special ed evaluation saying that you did RTI when you really didn't. It's that implementation is a high stakes issue at this point. And what professional development can we use, you know, from the perspective of the multidisciplinary team, what are some professional development that we need? For example, how to use RTI assessments to write IEP goals, et cetera, et cetera. The district level might look at, okay, well, there are some subgroups of students who are really, we're finding that we've got a huge pool of students who aren't responding to intervention, so we really can't say that these are disabilities. We've got something with our core. We can't refer all these students for disability evaluations when we're at too high a percentage of students who aren't making progress. Are students with disabilities making adequate progress per state guidelines? Again, state reviews might look at students with disabilities, and if they're not making appropriate gains, you might be put on a local assistance plan. So that does kind of tie in to some of the RTI decision-making and assessment. What are the requirements for our referral process? One of the downloads that you have available for with this webinar is a check sheet for a referral process that covers all the core components of RTI, just to make sure that those have been put in place when you're considering a referral based on lack of response to different instructional approaches. And, you know, what are the decision rules? And this is key, and I know a lot of districts really don't do this. And there's a really good article, Matt Burns is the principal author on this, saying, well, what's ethical practice in RTI, and how do you avoid legal issues with RTI? And part of what he comes to the conclusion is that there's a lot of things that the LEA or local education agency has to come up with criteria. These aren't criteria that New York State is telling us specifically, or that there's a national site that tells us specifically these are the hard and fast guidelines to what a disability is with RTI. And we're going to go through what it might look like and how a district might make some of those criteria. But the Burns article really advocates that the LEA really create decisions so that you're being consistent when you're looking at disability identification. You're being both appropriate and consistent. So I'm not going to read this slide to you, but I did want this to be part of the presentation. This simply says that as of July 1st, 2012, the district, it is really recommended that we use data from the RTI process in looking at learning disability determination. And I'm going to show you a couple other slides that come from New York State Education Department on some guidelines for using RTI data for LD decision making. But again, the criteria really have to come from the LEA. They don't really provide hard and fast criteria that would allow a district to be very consistent in how they would look at students. And not only is the state saying this, and certainly states across the country are using RTI data as part of a comprehensive evaluation for student disability, but now there's white papers by experts in the field. This was back several years ago, right around 2001, I believe. There's a series of white papers by 16 experts in disability, evaluating learning disabilities, and they came to consensus, and part of the consensus was best practice in learning disability evaluation includes an RTI process where we're trying various interventions, we're ruling out instructional casualties as a reason for an individual student's lack of progress. And so the RTI is really best practice for student identification. And it is part of what we're supposed to be doing in schools. This is some guidelines from State Ed. This is from the P-12 site of State Ed that talks about some criteria for what you need to have for student evaluation for learning disabilities. We have to prove that the student was provided appropriate instruction, including research-based instruction in reading. These are what we need to do for identifying learning disabilities when we use RTI in determination of a learning disability. Progress monitoring data that responded to particular interventions of increasing intensity. It's not that they didn't respond to one intervention, that when they don't respond to one, you keep going with increasing intensity of those interventions. And if they don't respond to multiple interventions, then you know you've got a student that you might want to consider as having a disability. Instructional information on a student's skill level and rate of improvement relative to grade level standards or criterion reference benchmarks. And they really mention use of CBM regarding students' performance that's useful and instructionally relevant. So they do recommend CBM in this document. So what is inadequate progress? You might consider students who are locally below the 15th percentile as saying, these kids really need some specialized instruction. So we look at what a dual discrepancy is, it's called, for LD determination. It's discrepant from peers. These students are discrepant from peers. In this particular graph, these students are performing below the these are actually below the 20th percentile. We might want to identify those performing below the 15th percentile according to both local and national norms. If you're in a very high-performing district and they're below the 15th percentile locally, but they're average anywhere else, we wouldn't be considering those students for disability. The second criteria for in a dual discrepancy is gap in expected progress. So we're providing interventions of increasing intensity. This would be the student's score. And we can see that the student has not, this is the goal that we set for the student. The typical ROI, or rate of improvement for second graders, we talked about setting goals in one of the previous webinars. The typical ROI in this school district is 0.9. Typical improvement for a student in second grade is 1.2 words per week improvement. Our goal for Jose's catch-up rate is 1.5. That's the rate we set here. We wanted him to catch up to peers. The district identified criteria that indicates insufficient progress is actually they came up with 0.7 words per week progress. If you're making less than that, you are discrepant in terms of your expected progress. There's no gold standard. This is something that the district has to set. Based on some thoughtful process that they engage in. And you can see that despite multiple intervention attempts through the year, Jose's growth is below that 0.7. So we're very concerned about him, and he's below target. This would be an example of a student with a STAR assessment who's getting progress monitoring. This was the goal. And this student is actually backtracking according to the STAR data. So you know that we talked about how to set goals. You might set RTI goals. we like to set a catch-up goal, perhaps 75th percentile rate of improvement, or we want them to at least make a 50th percentile growth, or we want them to reach a certain criteria by the end of the year. But we might want to consider something else when we're looking at a criteria for inadequate growth that we use for special education eligibility. And again, this is decided by your local education agency. So the problem with setting the RTI rate is if you said anybody not performing at the 75th percentile rate of improvement, we're going to consider LD if they're below average, you're probably going to refer too many kids for a special ed evaluation. You might consider any score below the average rate of improvement for a student in that grade level. So if the average rate of improvement for second graders is 1.2, and kids in your district are making about 1.2 words per week progress, the idea is if a particular student is getting additional intervention, we would expect them to be making some catch-up growth. They're not only getting the 90 minutes of core instruction, and say in literacy or in math, but you're doing additional intervention to catch them up, and they're not making catch-up growth. This could still result in maybe too many referrals, but again, that's up to the district to decide. Some people would say one standard deviation below the average rate of improvement. So I'll show you what that might look like here. This happens to be a FastBridge growth chart. AIMSWeb also has a chart that I'll show you in a second. This would be the average rate of growth for a second grader with RCVM, and then a standard deviation. It's 1.36, probably a little bit difficult to see on this slide. 1.36 minus 0.38, I think it is, would be 0.98 or below, would be a really insufficient growth if that's where the district wanted to make that decision. And AIMSWeb has similar charts where you look at what typical growth is, and then below that, AIMSWeb typically uses the standard error of measure of 0.5. So if you took average growth minus 0.5, that might be your inadequate growth. But again, that's up to the local education administration. I'm going to go kind of quickly through here for sake of time. In addition to using the RTI process, you also have to have these rule outs for disabilities, such as can they see, can they hear, is it English is limited English responsible, is it that they just didn't attend school, or et cetera. So this referral checklist, academic and referral checklist, if you're looking at social emotional behavioral referrals, these checklists can kind of help to rule all those things out. And if you're engaged in a really good RTI process, you've already looked at these issues. Those resources are available for download with this webinar. And I've given you some links to some other helpful resources, including the guidance document from the RTI TAC, guidance from P12 on RTI assessments used for disabilities, as well as this is a very helpful site, the RTI network, where there's a toolkit for special education identification using RTI data. So those can be very, very helpful. The idea is that we have this synergetic process with all these different teams, and that we keep cycling through. And if we keep on doing that and we're communicating with one another, we're going to have an infrastructure that supports all students, including those who are at significant risk. And perhaps we can prevent some students from having the characteristics of extreme risk, that we're decreasing risk over the course of a year or several years. And that we're tying in several other district initiatives into our RTI process, kind of like one of these initial slides that I showed you, that you're kind of creating an infrastructure for database decision-making to support RTI as well as other school and state requirements. You're coordinating all these efforts and having an infrastructure so that you're not working in silos and having to do you're redoubling efforts, that you really have a coordinated system. That really is the conclusion for today's webinar. I would love to have questions, comments, concerns. I would especially really hope that you could complete the evaluation at the end of this webinar. Have my email right here. I want to thank you very much. If you have any comments or questions, you're certainly welcome to email me. But I just want you to think about, and again, the purpose of this webinar was to tie the other webinars together to really look at infrastructure that addresses multiple efforts that RTI and multi-tiered system of supports can support for both academics as well as social, emotional, and behavioral concerns. I want to thank you all very much for attending this and the other webinars, and really look forward to your questions and comments in the chat. Thank you.
Great, Seth. Thank you so much. It was another fabulous webinar. We appreciate all the information throughout the whole strand. We'll give it a minute and see if anybody has any questions. But in the meantime, I did post the link to the evaluation. Again, you'll get it via email as well. But if you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we appreciate it. And I do see we have multiple attendees typing, so we'll give it a minute here.
Great.
Nicole, I can post the link in a second, but yes, all the documents as well as the recording for today's webinar will be available on our webpage, and I'll post the link in just a second. And there's the link for you, and find it under today's webinar strand and then today's topic. Hopefully that answers that for you, Nicole.
And I've got a question. You mentioned the decision tree should be developed at the school level. And that's a great question. I think the school level is probably the best. They're probably closest to the ground, if you want to call it that, for where the resources are in a given district. This is an excellent question because, you know, I think one of my concerns with the decision trees is that we might find that there's a given grade level at a given year, and most of us who are educators that have been around for a while see these kind of pockets of students that exhibit very high risk for whatever reason. And so you want to kind of shift resources to that grade level, allocate some resources or professional development to support the teachers in supporting that group of students. And sometimes if we have a consistent decision tree across the grade levels, it doesn't allow for that flexibility. I think the decision tree being made at the school level really helps with that. But if you're a district with multiple schools and you're looking at allocation of resources across multiple schools, having that lay of the land and looking at where pockets of risk exist in multiple schools might help the district team to guide the school team in those decision tree guidelines. So that's an excellent question, and I don't have a hard and fast answer for it. I think the more the grade level communicates with the school level, communicates with the district level, and vice versa, really helps for those decision rules to be helpful, but you need to have a lot of flexibility with that too. I see Sheila. I would just like to say that my district has a lot of work to do regarding RTI. Assuming if there's a question. Oh, yeah. I think a concern that the folks in the trenches aren't involved in some of the decision making. I think really to get that ownership of having folks in the trenches, the people that are doing the instruction, the people that see the day-to-day, are really important representatives to have on these teams. So thank you for that comment, and I hope your administrators might take a look at this webinar and that might help. I hope I addressed that question. What else can be done when the RTI team is not in agreement regarding a referral for an ELL. As a bilingual psychologist, these are really tough decisions. One of the things that we look at, and I think is an unanswered question in data systems, is what is appropriate progress for an English language learner, and now we call them ENLs, I guess. And I think that it becomes very complicated because a student who is just off the plane and coming into a district with very, very little English and maybe some limitations in education back in their native country, they can have, they look very different than progress of a student who's got some English under their belt and is making progress. When I see statements and kind of these global statements that say we have to compare ELLs to like peers, I appreciate that sentiment that we can't be unfair in how we compare them. Having said that, it's rare that I see an English language learner who's referred to me that has any like peers around. They all have a very unique educational and language history, and trying to understand where they are might help us to guide the decision-making for what we should expect from them. One thing that I do expect is that they're making progress, that we don't see stagnation. And I think progress monitoring can really help us with that. Because there aren't a lot of really strong guidelines for how much progress an English language learner should be making, I can see where there would be a lot of disagreement in terms of a referral. But I do think that the RTI process does support ELLs very strongly, and that progress monitoring can be very appropriate, progress monitoring in the language of instruction. And I hope I answered that. It is a real challenge when we're really looking at how much progress to expect. Yeah, thank you for retyping and responding to that, because I wonder if you have any additional comments, Margarita. Okay, it is a challenge, yeah. AIMSWeb has norms for English. For those of you who are, and a lot of people that use AIMSWeb aren't aware of some of the norms for example, if you're doing benchmarking in English, for English language learners, they have norms for level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5 ELLs. And so there is a way to go in to the AIMSWeb system and identify, well, at this point in time, a level 1 ELL, this would be a low score for a level 1 ELL at this benchmark period for this grade, for this measure. So that's good information. What AIMSWeb doesn't do, and I'm hoping as we get more and more tools for English language learners, because I know there's a burning need out there and test developers are aware of this need, is being able to look at, okay, for a level 1 ELL that is just beginning, on average, how much progress do they make in nonsense word fluency or calculation fluency or reading connected text in English? So those kinds of developments are front and center in a lot of test developers' minds, and hopefully working on that. And I'm just looking at some of the comments and seeing if there are any other questions. I certainly want to address all the questions here. Okay, just some other comments.
I see someone typing, so I'm giving it a minute.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. And by the way, you all have my email on this PowerPoint. So if there's some questions that come up later on, certainly feel free to email.
I don't see anyone typing now. I'm going to give it a minute. I'll end the recording, but we'll see if the thing
okay. Comment, I have found a way to keep your classroom teachers in the loop is to bring them into the decision process with you, help them understand universal screening and progress monitoring and what it means for their instruction. No apologies for spelling needed. So, yeah, I think bringing them in the loop and seeing how it really can impact instruction. Over time, they really start to get it. I also find, I'll say this, is having teachers conduct some of the assessments, especially the progress monitoring with CBM, I find is invaluable in getting them to really understand that data and bringing them in. So, great comments here.
Oh, Marcianne, thank you for that comment about the webinars. I know that we are planning some exciting webinars to be in the fall or throughout all of next year. So keep in touch with our webpage, nysrti.org, and you know, as those are scheduled, we'll post those there. And I just want to thank everyone for attending, and we hope we see you back online next year.